I love to play the game of chess. It's a lot of fun. When I was younger, I used to go to chess club and play lots of different people. My dad actually is the one who taught me how to play, and I used to play him a lot until he wouldn't play with me anymore. And then, you know, now I don't play too much because I can't find anybody to play with, but I love the game. It's a good, fun hobby. Something I greatly enjoy. But a hobby is not something that I would ever feel the need to convert other people to, right? It would never occur to me to get angry if somebody doesn't like my hobby or enjoy playing chess. It's a private preference, right? Now, when it comes to religion and faith, that's exactly how the secular society treats our faith. That's how they look at us. It's a little more to them than a private hobby or an interest for us. And for many in secular society, religion is not something that belongs in the public sphere. It is well and good for pious people to be religious in the private of their homes, but it doesn't belong in the public forum in their eyes. In fact, many people feel uncomfortable when religious people begin to demand that their religious freedoms be honored and that their faith must be lived not only in private, but also in public. Where does this fear come from? I would submit to you that it comes from that fear that violence will follow. That violence will follow upon our religious convictions. In other words, if we allow religion into the public sphere, then there will be conflict and unrest. History has often pointed to religion as the cause of confrontation in the world. That's not really the full story, of course, right? Politics, power, and greed have also played a role in these times of unrest, and it's not a simple solution as secularists like to say it is. In any case, there is a fear, right? There's a fear that religion in the public sphere will result in war and discord. In Acts today, we see the apostles are confronted by the Jewish authorities. We gave you strict orders, did we not, to stop teaching in that name, and that you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching. Peter, as the leader of the apostles, responds, "We must obey God rather than men." Now, like the Jewish leaders in Jesus' day, many people in our day fear that bringing Jesus into the public life will cause unrest. Doesn't that sum up our own conundrum in a way? More and more in our country and in the Western society as a whole, we face restriction on where our faith is allowed to speak and where it is expected to be silent. And yet, if we are truly Catholic, if we are truly followers of Jesus, then our faith must inform every aspect of our lives. It must be a part of our politics, must be tied to the way we spend our money. It must be part of how we spend our free time, how we make decisions and choices. Jesus must have a bearing on every aspect of our lives. That's what it means to be a follower. And if he does not, then we are not truly a disciple yet. To draw a division in our lives and to exclude Christ from part of it is really to reject the Christian lifestyle. Now, for some, this might be an intentional decision, and in that case, it is a willful opposition to Christ. For many others, I think it's often that we are not yet fully converted, and that conversion is ongoing in our lives. And we have to give ourselves to Christ in a further way yet. We might even want to, but we're not there yet. So there's a difference. But as soon as we intentionally keep God out of an aspect of our lives, we are on very shaky ground when it comes to living the gospel. Now, am I advocating that we rise up in violence in the name of religion? And am I suggesting that we overthrow the government? Certainly not. Certainly not. Anytime as Christians we resort to violence as a means to bring Jesus into the world, we completely fail and we have missed who God is. If we look at history, with few exceptions, the only successful means to combat this unreasonable expectation to keep faith out of the public sphere is to live faithfully the life that Jesus calls us to, both publicly and privately. In the long run, that is the only path that will convert the world and leave our own witness and faith intact. In this time of Easter, we see in Acts and in the Gospels the birth of the church and a reminder of the calling of the apostles. This is a good thing for us to reflect upon. Where are we in our call? How have we responded? Jesus is calling us not just to follow him, not simply to learn about him or to try it out for a while. Now in Easter, like he did for the apostles, Jesus is calling us to come and follow him and to go out into the world and live this new life. We will face challenges if we follow Jesus. There's no doubt about that. And if we are not challenged, then we should look carefully and ask, are we really a public Christian? Are we really a public follower of Jesus? Would others know that about us? If we stay true to Jesus and are witness to him, then secular society has nothing to fear. And in fact, we'll only benefit from our public living of our faith. But it is we who must steel ourselves. And like the apostles in Acts, we must rejoice that we have been found worthy to suffer dishonor for the sake of the name. For that shall be often our fate if we are faithful to Christ. Ours is a public faith, not only a private one. And so, as soon as society has convinced us that we should leave our faith aside and live it only privatized, it is at that moment when we have completely rejected and cast aside the fruits of Jesus' resurrection. He died publicly for us. The question for us is, will we live publicly for him?